Science states, our findings support the view that the central nervous system, by modulating immune function, exercises some measure of control over the inception and development of disease. The report goes on to say that a feeling of helplessness has been related to reduced anti-cancer killer cell activity and increased tumor growth. Depression in animals, as well as humans, lowers the immune response. And this helplessness has to do with how much control the person and the animal feel they have over stressful events. Those findings help explain why depression and a sense of helplessness are associated with cancer. Further research confirms that the stress response was found to be a principal precondition for physical illness in animals and humans. Sapolsky, 2010. The overall effect of stress on the immune system results in the blocking of the body's immune system because of the production of autoantibodies. If these autoantibodies are themselves blocked, the immune function resumes once again. Therefore, the blocking of the immune system is reversible. For example, research done at the Pasteur Institute in Paris has resulted in the so-called Bogomolets serum, which, when injected intradermally, results in reactivation of the immune system. This treatment is called the IBR, Immunobiologic Rejuvenation Treatment. A small amount of serum is injected within the skin on 3 successive days and results in rapid reactivation of the immune system. Reactivation of pro-health body responses is also seen in non-medical interventions, as in the correlation of meditation practice with a reduction in stress and depression. Research done on college students, for example, found that meditation led to a decrease in their inflammatory stress reaction, which was linked to the alleviation of their depression. The study found that students who participated faithfully in a 6-week meditation training experienced improved immune system functioning. The students in a control group who received only educational information about stress without the inner technique showed little to no physiological or psychological improvement. Pace et al., 2009. Unpublished research studies during the 1980s, for which I served as clinical advisor, showed a greater effectiveness of inner techniques in contrast to purely medical methods of stress reduction. The medical methods, such as progressive relaxation, have a positive effect. However, the ameliorative effect on heart rate and blood pressure is greater and more sustainable if inner mechanisms are consciously applied. These scientific results will not be surprising to people who have learned to use inner technologies, such as the letting go technique, which is a process of internal surrender that can be applied to any and all situations. They report that they are better able to handle stress because they are calmer in difficult situations after learning how to let go of negative feelings as the feelings arise. Kinesiologic testing. Kinesiology, or muscle testing, is a rewarding subject for studying the direct relationship between the mind and the body. The basic testing procedure is now relatively widely known and is both highly informative and simple to learn. Diagnosticians use kinesiologic methods to test the balance of the acupuncture system, the acupuncture meridians, and the overall functioning of the body's bioenergy system. Kinesiology deals primarily with muscle testing, as sudden drops in bioenergy are indicated by rapid weakening of the body's musculature. This response can be elicited by any negative energy that comes within the aura, vicinity, of the bioenergy system. The stimulus may be physical, such as artificial sweeteners, fluorescent lights, synthetic foods and fabrics, and certain rhythms produced by heavy metal or rap music groups. The most notable stimulus for our understanding is, however, the immediate weakening effect of a negative thought or feeling. A negative thought or feeling instantly weakens the body and creates an imbalance of the body's energy flow. Because this kind of muscle testing so beautifully and dramatically illustrates the connection between mind and body, it is worth the effort to know of the procedure and to experience it personally. Therefore, we will go into some detail about the testing procedure itself, which is extremely simple and requires only two persons. It is important to note that both the tester and the one being tested must be over the consciousness level of courage, calibration of 200, in order to obtain accurate responses from the testing procedure. That is, those who are dedicated to truth are shown the truth. Kinesiologic testing technique. The test subject stands with one arm stretched out to the side and raised to shoulder height. The second person serves as a tester. Using two fingers, the tester presses down quickly for a few seconds on the back of the testee's wrist to get a feel for muscle strength. At the same time that the tester presses down, he asks the test subject to resist with all his strength. It is important in doing this that the tester does not smile at the subject, and there should be no talking or music at that moment. It is best to have the test subject view a neutral object, such as a blank wall, or shut the eyes. After several trials, the tester will get a feel of the strength of the subject's muscles. For the demonstration, simply have the subject think of an emotionally unpleasant situation or hold in mind an unpleasant person. While the subject holds that unpleasant thought in mind, the tester presses down again for a few seconds to test the strength of the subject's arm, which is still being held out horizontally. At the same time, the test subject again resists with all his strength. It will be observed dramatically that there is a sudden major weakening of the deltoid muscle, which, with testing, will indicate a loss of about 50% of muscle strength. Now have the subject think of someone he loves and retest. He will instantly go strong. This is a dramatic and highly valuable phenomenon to experience and witness. The test can be repeated with various negative objects held in the subject's other hand, in their mouth, or placed on the crown of their head or at the solar plexus. To do this, have the subject look at a fluorescent light or a television commercial at the moment of testing, or test the difference between the effect of classical music versus heavy metal or rap music. Homemade bread versus machine-made bread, sugar versus honey, synthetic fabrics versus cotton, wool or silk, junk food versus organic health food, synthetic vitamin C versus organic rose hips vitamin C. Additional tests can be done for individual reactions to diet sodas, cigarettes, soaps, favorite foods, and other objects with which we come into frequent contact. As various objects and the effects of thoughts and feelings are tested, it soon becomes obvious that everything in the universe has a vibration, and that the vibration has a strengthening or weakening effect. For instance, to demonstrate the weakening effect of a negative energy food such as artificial sweeteners, it is not necessary to place the food in the mouth. It will have the same weakening effect if placed in the opposite hand or on the top of the head. When a person uses the mechanism of surrender and lets go of a negative feeling, the muscle testing we have described will change from weak to strong. As negative thoughts or belief systems are surrendered, they no longer have the power to deplete our energy. This is a basic law of consciousness. We are subject only to what we hold in mind. The body will respond to what we believe. If we believe that a certain substance is bad for us, then it will usually test weak with muscle testing. The same substance will make another person, who believes that it is good for them, strong. What is stressful to us, therefore, is primarily subjective. Muscle testing is responsible to unconscious belief systems as well as conscious ones. Testing often reveals that a person unconsciously feels or believes the opposite of what they think they consciously believe. The person, for example, may consciously believe they want to heal, but unconsciously be attached to the payoffs of illness. A simple muscle test reveals the truth of the matter. The relationship of consciousness to stress and disease. As we have seen, stress proneness and vulnerability are directly related to our general level of emotional functioning. The higher we are on the scale of consciousness, the less we respond with stressful reaction. We can take a simple incident from everyday life and illustrate the differences in reactivity. Let's say, for example, that we have parked our car, and just as we get out, the car parked in front of us backs up into our car with a thud. Our bumper and the front of the fender are dented. Here is what the different levels of consciousness might sound like. Shame. How embarrassing. I'm such a lousy driver. I can't even park a car. I'll never amount to anything. Guilt. I had it coming. How stupid I am. I should have done a better job of parking. Apathy. What's the use? Things like this always happen to me. I probably won't collect on the insurance anyway. There's no use talking to the guy. He'll just sue me. Life stinks. Grief. Now the car is ruined. It will never be the same. Life is grim. I will probably lose a bundle on this one. Fear. This guy is probably furious. I'm afraid he'll hit me. I'm afraid to talk back to him. He'll probably sue me. I'll probably never get the car fixed right again. Car repair people always rip me off. The insurance company will probably get out of this one, and I'll be the one left holding the bag. Desire. I can make a bundle on this one. I think I will hold my neck and fake a whiplash. My brother-in-law is a lawyer. We'll sue the pants off this idiot. I'll get a settlement on the highest estimate and get it fixed at a cheaper place. Anger. The damned idiot. I think I'll teach this guy a lesson. He deserves a good punch in the nose. I'll sue his pants off and make him suffer. My blood is boiling. I feel shaky with rage. I could kill the bastard. Pride. Look where you're going, you fool. Oh, God, the world is full of such bumbling idiots. How dare he damage my new car? Who the hell does he think he is? He's probably got cheap insurance. Thank God mine is the best. Courage. Oh, well, we've both got insurance. I'll take down the data and handle it okay. A nuisance, but I can handle it. I'll talk to the driver and get it settled out of court. Neutrality. These things happen in life. You can't drive 20,000 miles a year without an occasional fender bender. Willingness. How can I help the guy calm down? He doesn't need to feel upset about it. We'll just exchange the necessary insurance information and be okay with each other. Acceptance. It could have been worse. At least nobody's hurt. It's only money anyway. The insurance company will take care of it. I suppose the guy's upset. That's only natural. Such things just can't be helped. Thank God I'm not running this universe. It's only a minor nuisance. Reason. Let's be practical here. I'd like to take care of it as quickly as possible so I can get on with the day's activities. What's the most efficient way to resolve our problem? Love. I hope the guy isn't upset. I'll calm him down. Says to the other driver, relax. It's all okay. We've both got insurance. I know how it is. It happened to me just the same way. It was a minor dent, and we got it fixed in a day. Don't worry. We won't report it if you don't want to. We can probably deduct it and avoid a raise in the insurance premium. There's nothing to be upset about, reassures the upset driver, putting an arm on his shoulder in fellow human camaraderie. Peace. Well, isn't that fortuitous? I was going to have the rattle in the bumper fixed anyway, and the fender already had a little dent. So now I'll get it fixed for nothing. Say, aren't you George's brother-in-law? You're just the guy I wanted to see. I have some great business that I think you can handle for me. We'll both benefit. You look like the right person to research it for us. How about a cup of coffee and we can talk it over? By the way, here's my insurance card. Say, that's the same company as yours. What a coincidence. Everything is working out for the best. No problem. Walks off humming with new friend. The incident already forgotten. The above illustrates all that we have been saying. It is we ourselves who create stressful reactions as a consequence of what we are holding within us. The suppressed feelings determine our belief systems and our perception of ourselves and others. These, in turn, literally create events and incidents in the world, events that we, then, turn around and blame for our reactions. This is a self-reinforcing system of illusions. This is what the enlightened sages mean when they say, we are all living in an illusion. All that we experience are our own thoughts, feelings, and beliefs projected onto the world, actually causing what we see to happen. Most people have experienced all the different levels of consciousness at one time or another, but in general, we tend to operate primarily at one level or another for long periods of time. Most people are preoccupied with survival in all its subtle forms, and so they reflect primarily fear, anger, and a desire for gain. They have not learned that the state of lovingness is the most powerful of all survival tools. Interestingly, as we said in an earlier chapter, having a pet dog can lengthen a human life by 10 years. The love, affection, caring for another being, and companionship that go along with having a dog mitigate the negative effects of stress. Love stimulates endorphins and life energy, bringing a healing balm to stress-prone lives. Chapter 15, Relationship Between Mind and Body. The Influence of Mind. The basic dictum to comprehend is that the body obeys the mind. Therefore, the body tends to manifest what the mind believes. The belief may be held consciously or unconsciously. This dictum follows from the law of consciousness that states, we are only subject to what we hold in mind. The only power that anything has over us is the power of belief that we give it. By power, we mean energy and the will to believe. If we look at the map of consciousness, it's easy to see why the mind is more powerful than the body. The energy field of reason calibrates at 400, with its beliefs and concepts of the mind, is more powerful than the energy field of the physical body, calibrates at 200. Thus, the body will express the beliefs held in mind, consciously or unconsciously. Our proneness to accept negative beliefs depends on how much negativity we are holding in the first place. A positive mind, for example, will refuse to accept negative thoughts and simply reject them as untrue for oneself. There is a refusal to buy into commonly held negative ideas. We know how easy it is to sell self-condemnation to a guilt-ridden person, or fear of some disease to a fearful person. The idea, for instance, that colds are catching is a good example. The thought that everybody's got a cold will be subscribed to by a person who has sufficient guilt, fear, and naivete regarding the laws of consciousness. Because of unconscious guilt, a person unconsciously feels that they deserve a cold. The body obeys the mind's belief that colds are caused by viruses, which are catching and contagious. Thus, the body, which is controlled by the mind's belief, manifests the cold. The person who has let go of the underlying negative energies of guilt and fear does not have a fearful mind that believes a cold is going around, I'll probably get it like everybody else. These are the dynamics behind disease. The mechanisms are carried out through the mind-induced alterations in the energy flow of the bioenergy system and through the spillover of suppressed energy into the autonomic nervous system. Thought is powerful because it has a high rate of vibration. A thought is actually a thing. It has an energy pattern. The more energy we give it, the more power it has to manifest itself physically. This is the paradox of much so-called health education. The paradoxical effect is that fearful thoughts are reinforced and given so much power that epidemics are actually created by the media, e.g. the swine flu. The fear-based warnings about health dangers actually set up the mental environment in which the very thing that is feared will occur. Superimposed around the physical body is an energy body, whose form is very much like that of the physical body, and whose patterns actually control the physical body. This control is at the level of thought or intention. Advanced subatomic quantum physics has shown, similarly, that observation influences subatomic high-energy particles. The power of mind over body has been demonstrated by clinical research. For instance, in one study, a group of women were told that they would be given a hormone injection to bring on their menstrual periods 2 weeks early. Actually, they were merely given a placebo injection of saline. Nonetheless, over 70% of the women developed early premenstrual tension, with all of the physical and psychological symptoms. Another clear demonstration of this law of consciousness is observed in persons with multiple personality disorder. Once thought to be rare, it is now found that multiple personality disorder is relatively common, and so research into the phenomenon has become increasingly prominent. It has been shown that the different personalities in the one body have different physical accompaniments. There are, for instance, changes in the electroencephalographic brain waves, as well as changes in their handedness in handwriting, pain thresholds, electrical skin response, IQ, menstrual periods, cerebral hemisphere dominance, language ability, accent, and vision. Thus, when the personality that believes in allergies is present, the person is allergic. But when another personality is present in the body, the allergies disappear. One personality may require glasses, and another may not. These different personalities actually have notable differences in intraocular pressure and other physiological measurements. These physical phenomena also shift under the influence of hypnosis in normal people. Allergies can be made to appear or disappear by simple suggestion. Persons who receive the suggestion of being allergic to roses while under hypnosis will start sneezing when they come out of the hypnotic state and spot a vase of roses on the doctor's desk, even if the roses are artificial. Sir John Eccles, Nobel laureate, stated that after a lifetime of study it became apparent that the brain is not the origin of the mind, as science and medicine had believed, but the other way around. The mind controls the brain, which acts as a receiving station, like a radio, with thoughts being similar to radio waves and the brain being similar to the receiver. The brain is like a receiving set, a switchboard that receives thought forms and then translates them into neuronal functioning and memory storage. For instance, until recently, it was believed that voluntary movements of the muscles originated in the brain's motor cortex. But now, as Eccles has reported, the intention to move is recorded by the supplemental motor area of the brain next to the motor cortex. The brain is, therefore, activated by the mind's intention, and not vice versa. We see this in the many brain imaging studies done on people in states of meditation. For example, Dr. Richard Davidson's research during the last decade at the University of Wisconsin-Madison has demonstrated that compassion and loving-kindness meditation practices stimulated increased activity in the left prefrontal cortex, the seat of positive emotions such as happiness, and the production of high-amplitude gamma wave synchrony, sign of expanded awareness, alertness, and insight. What is held in mind has the power to alter brain activity and neuroanatomy. We are subject to all kinds of effects of the unconscious and conscious beliefs that our mind is holding on all of our bodily systems. This includes our beliefs about the supposed effects of various foods, allergens, menopausal and menstrual disorders, infections, and all other diseases that are associated with specific belief systems, coupled with the underlying stress proneness due to the presence of suppressed negative feelings. Norman Cousins, editor-in-chief of the Saturday Review for 3 decades, demonstrated this principle when he cured himself of serious physical illness by means of laughter. He wrote Anatomy of an Illness, a book about his experience of recovery from a crippling arthritic disease through heavy doses of vitamin C and belly laughter induced by films featuring the Marx Brothers. He discovered that laughter had an anesthetic effect that could alleviate his pain for 2 hours. Laughing is a method of letting go. Through laughter, Cousins just kept letting go of the underlying emotional pressure and canceling negative thoughts. This resulted in very positive and beneficial changes within his body and facilitated his eventual recovery. Disease-prone beliefs. To ascertain our own disease proneness, we can look at the following questions. Do I worry about my health, holding fear thoughts in mind about what might happen to me? Do I get a secret feeling of fear, excitement, and danger when I hear about a new disease that is currently being reported and in vogue? Do I spend time on constant checkups, reading about diseases, getting frightened by TV stories about them? Am I interested in hearing about the diseases of famous people? Do I believe that the environment and foods are full of hidden dangers, or that foods contain additives which are poisonous and will cause disease? Do I believe that certain diseases run in our family? Do I stop, or want to stop, but don't dare, to witness auto accident victims? Do I like hospital TV programs? Do I like TV programs that include hitting, shouting, fist fights, killing, torture, crime, and other forms of violence? Am I a guilt-ridden person? Am I holding a lot of anger? Do I condemn other people's behavior? Am I prone to be judgmental? Do I hold resentments and grudges? Do I feel trapped and hopeless? Do I say of myself, whatever is going around, I'll probably catch it? Am I concerned with acquisitions and status symbols instead of the quality of relationships? Do I carry a lot of insurance and still worry that it's not enough? In summary, the way to change our bodies is to change our thoughts and feelings. We must let go of negative thoughts and belief systems and shed the stress of negative emotions that give them energy. We have to cancel the negative programming that comes from the world, as well as our own belief systems. We can see the deleterious effects of fearful negative programming in people who become subject to fear of foods, chemicals, and substances in the environment. Each day, a new chemical or substance is announced to have harmful effects. The more fearful we are, the more quickly we become programmed, and then the body responds accordingly. Fear of substances, foods, air, energies, and stimuli of all kinds has gotten to the point where there is almost an environmental paranoia. Some people become so phobic about the environment and everything in it that their world gets smaller and smaller. They become more fearful every day. Some people even succumb to the point where they flee the world and live in artificial bubble enclosures, victims of their own minds. This can happen to a reasonable person, even to a physician. It started with pollens, ragweed, horse dander, dog and cat hair, dust, feathers, wool, chocolate, cheese, and nuts, all believed to cause allergies. Later, sugar was added, hyperglycemia, plus food additives, cancer, eggs and dairy products, cholesterol, and organ meats, gout. Next on the harmful list came food dyes, saccharin, caffeine, coloring matter, aluminum, synthetic fabrics, noise, fluorescent lights, insect sprays, deodorants, food cooked at high temperature, minerals in the water, chlorine in the water, nicotine, cigarette smoke, petrochemicals, car exhaust fumes, positive ions, low-level electric vibrations, acidic foods, pesticides, and foods with seeds. The world shrank so small that there was nothing safe to eat. Nothing could be worn. There was no air to breathe. The body had all the allergies, reactions, and diseases to prove it. Going out to dinner became an enjoyment of the past, since there was nothing on the menu that could be eaten, except lettuce, thoroughly washed, of course. And it was imperative to wear white gloves when picking up restaurant utensils. Then, with the learning of one core truth, the whole pattern unraveled. What is held in mind tends to manifest, including unconscious beliefs. The culprit was not the world, but the mind. All of the negative programming and fearful conditioning was in the mind, and the body obeyed the mind. This law of consciousness reversed the spiraling paranoia. As each internal belief was looked at and surrendered, all of the negative bodily reactions, diseases, and symptoms disappeared. In other words, it was not poison ivy leaves that caused an allergic reaction, but the mind's belief that poison ivy was an allergen. As the mind let go of its programming, the body's reactions cleared. On kinesiologic testing, there was a complete reversal of the reaction patterns. What had formerly produced a weak muscle response no longer had any effect. The overall stress proneness level obviously became much lower, to the point that the body failed to react at all to what would otherwise be considered negative stimuli, e.g., fluorescent lights, artificial sweetener. Comparison with other techniques. As we have seen, stress arises from within as a response to a stimulus. The stressor, actually, is the pressure of the suppressed and repressed emotional energies, which are a reflection of our general low-level consciousness. Thus, it is the content of our consciousness that has to be changed to eliminate and prevent stress. The commonly prescribed treatments for stress are similar to the treatments in the field of medicine. They try to fix the damage done by the disease we already have, rather than cure the internal cause of the disease. Conferences on stress, for example, routinely include the following topics: aromatherapy, physical exercise workshop, acupuncture for stress disorders, biofeedback, chiropractic, stress regulation, nutrition, fitness and exercise profile, homeopathy, autogenic training, holistic healing, massage and body work, flotation tanks, dental balance, unwinding technique by use of body movements. As we can see from the above, the common approaches deal only with the consequences and resultant damage from the stress syndrome. None of them deal with the basic causes. They all involve relatively complicated and time-consuming procedures, and they do not lend themselves to on-the-spot application. As an example, let's say that we are giving a speech or lecture. We are on the spot. It is impractical to stop in the middle of a speech and do breathing exercises, go into hypnotic trance, stick ourselves with acupuncture needles, or hitch up to a biofeedback machine. How handy is a flotation tank in the middle of a family argument? Because these approaches are temporary, time-consuming, and often expensive, people try them for a short while with enthusiasm, but then their enthusiasm wears off, because basically, nothing has really changed. The same basic perceptions of the world persist. The same emotional pressures are there. The personality remains the same. Life circumstances have not changed. One's level of consciousness is not altered. The person's psychology is the same. Expectation continues as before, and life, therefore, continues as before. Without a change of consciousness, there is no real reduction of stress. Only the consequences are ameliorated. All of these after-the-fact techniques and treatments do help and often alleviate a given condition and bring some relief, but they leave the basis of the problem untouched. One can follow all of these techniques and yet remain the same stress-prone person. In our experience, the conscious use of the mechanism of surrender is more effective in addressing chronic stress-related illnesses. Illnesses begin to heal spontaneously because the underlying emotional cause has been removed, and further treatments often become unnecessary. In the uncommon case of persistent illness that is not cleared by the surrender of negative thoughts and feelings, unknown factors, such as karmic proclivities, may be operating. In such cases, we surrender the desire to change or control our experience of life, and we await further inner discovery about the source and significance of the illness. Surrender at great depth is complete when a person has let go of needing or wanting a physical healing to occur. A state of peace about the situation is reached when all three aspects of illness, physical, mental, and spiritual, have been addressed and the final outcome, or wished-for recovery, has been surrendered. Peace comes with total inner surrender to what is. Chapter 16. The Benefits of Letting Go. Emotional Growth. The most obvious and visible effect of letting go of negative feelings is a resumption of emotional and psychological growth and the solving of problems, which often have been long-standing. There is pleasure and satisfaction as we begin to experience the powerful effects of eliminating the blocks to achievement and satisfaction in life. We soon discover that the limiting thoughts and negative beliefs, which we had naively held to be true, were all merely the result of accumulated negative feelings. When the feeling is let go, then the thought pattern changes from I can't to I can, and to I'm happy to do it. Entire areas of life can open up. What used to be awkward or unexpressed can become effortless and joyously alive. Illustrative of this progression is the experience of an intelligent, successful, middle-aged, professional man who all his life had been unable to dance. He wanted to dance in the worst way, and several times during his life had attended dancing classes. But each time he found himself to be stiff, awkward, and self-conscious. By sheer willpower, he did manage at times to go through the motions on the dance floor, but never enjoyed it and always felt ill at ease. His movements felt stiff and calculated, and the whole experience was lacking in satisfaction, doing nothing for his self-esteem. After about a year of working with the mechanism of surrender, he was at a party with someone who kept insisting that he get up and dance. "You know I can't dance," he said. "Ah, come on and try it," she entreated. She persisted and said, "Forget about your feet. Just watch me and do what my body does." Reluctantly, he agreed, and he kept letting go of his feelings of resistance and anxiety. On the dance floor, he let go completely. In an instant, his inner feelings ascended the scale from apathy to love, and to his amazement, he suddenly began to dance like he had always dreamed of and envied. The realization of "I can do it" hit him, and he went from love to joy and even to ecstasy. His delight radiated to everyone. Friends stopped to watch. From a state of high joy, he suddenly went into the experience of oneness with his dance partner. He suddenly saw his own self looking out of her eyes and realized that there was actually only one self behind all the individual selves. He and she became telepathically connected. He knew her every step a split second before she took it. They were in perfect harmony and danced as though they had practiced and danced together for years. He could hardly contain his joy. The dancing became effortless and began to happen of its own, without any conscious thought on his part. The longer they danced, the more energy he felt. It was a peak experience that was to change this man's life. He went home that night and danced some more. Freestyle disco dancing had always terrified him more than any other, because there was no form to be memorized. It necessitated spontaneity and a free feeling, which is just what he had specifically been unable to experience previously. At home, he turned on the disco music and began to dance for hours. He watched himself in the mirror, fascinated by the body's surrender and the inner feeling of freedom. All of a sudden, he remembered a previous lifetime in vivid detail. He had been a great dancer in that lifetime, and now he began to remember the specific instructions that had been given to him by his teachers in that lifetime. When he followed their instructions, the results were amazing. He discovered that there was a vertical gravitational center of balance within himself, and he began to rotate about it in perfect balance. The movement was effortless, and he became merely the witness of the dancing. It was no longer any feeling of I. There was just the joy and the dancing itself. Now he instantly understood the very basis of the Sufi dancing of the whirling dervishes, their ability to whirl and spin without dizziness or fatigue, that certain state of consciousness ensued from the surrendering of the individual self. The breakthrough that this man experienced on the dance floor then transferred itself to many other previously blocked areas of his life. Where there had been limitation, now there was rapid expansion. These changes were very obvious to his friends and family, whose positive feedback increased his self-esteem and his desire to keep letting go of the negative feelings and thoughts that had blocked the experience of joy in life. This experience has been cited in some detail for a number of reasons. It illustrates the scale of consciousness that we presented in a previous chapter. For 50 years, this man had been at the lowest end of the scale in this area of his life, with the accompanying belief, "I can't." The inhibition decreased his self-esteem and resulted in avoidance. For years, he managed to avoid social affairs where there would be dancing. He was angry at himself for his inhibition, and he would feel angry when anyone tried to get him to dance. In a matter of seconds and minutes, he experienced every emotion of the whole scale and went all the way to the top. At that point, there was the emergence of a higher consciousness with sudden spiritual awareness of a very high order. With higher consciousness came understanding and the release of psychic ability, telepathic communication, synchronicity, and past life recall. As a result, his life showed a behavioral change, and its momentum removed an endless series of blocks and limitations. There was a positive social response, and the positive feedback reinforced the growth motivation that was already in progress. The rate of emotional growth reported by those who use the mechanism of surrender is related to the consistency with which they surrender their negative feelings, and there is no relationship to age. People have ranged in age from the teens to the 80s with equal benefit. Repressed and suppressed feelings require counter-energy to keep them submerged. It takes energy to hold down our feelings. As these feelings are relinquished, the energy that had been holding down the negativity is now freed for constructive uses. Consequent to letting go, there is an increase in available energy for creativity, growth, work, and interpersonal relationships. The quality and enjoyment of these activities increase. Most people are too exhausted to bring a really high quality into their experiences unless the negative programs opposing them have been resolved. Problem solving. The effectiveness of the letting go mechanism in problem solving often is quite astonishing. Understanding the process involved here is very important because it is quite different than the world's usual methods. The approach that brings fast and easy results is the following. Don't look for answers. Instead, let go of the feelings behind the question. When we are surrendered on the feeling behind the question, we can let go of any other feelings that we might also have about what seems to be the problem. When we are finally and fully surrendered on all components, the answer will be there waiting for us. We won't have to look for it. Consider how simple and easy this is as compared to the mind's usual, long, drawn-out, inefficient attempts at problem-solving. Usually, the mind hunts and pecks endlessly, fumbling around with first this possible answer and then that one. The reason the mind can't decide is because it is looking in the wrong place. Let's see how the system works with a common everyday example. Let's say that we disagree with our mate on which movie to see. We look to see what the feeling is behind the problem. In this case, let's say that we find the feeling of anger and resentment. Specifically, that we feel resentful about the lack of romantic time spent together. What we really want tonight is affectionate time spent together. As we let it be okay inside ourselves that what we really want is affectionate togetherness, it suddenly dawns on us that we don't want to go to a movie at all. We just want to be together. Or the opposite might happen. We might find that the feeling behind wanting to go to a movie is fear, because we want to avoid spending the evening talking to and being close to our mate. We see that the feelings we have built up are unpleasant. We have resentment. So we let go of wanting to modify that feeling, and we just let it be there. It's okay to have that resentment. As we surrender our resistance to the resentful feeling, we feel less guilty. We admit to our mate that we have had a resentment. A dialogue starts going, and the other person's feelings are cleared up as well. We both feel relieved and closer, and we then say, to heck with the movies. Let's stay home, make love, and go for a walk in the moonlight. This approach is rewarding in all decision-making. When we first clear out the underlying feelings, the decisions are more realistic and wise. Think of how often we have changed our mind and regretted past decisions. That is because there was an unrecognized and unrelinquished feeling behind the decision. When the action that was decided upon is taken, the underlying feeling shifts. Then, from the viewpoint of the new feeling space, the decision turns out to be wrong. This happens with such regularity that most people develop a fear of decision-making, because it turned out to be wrong so often in the past. Problem-solving using the mechanism of surrender can often be lightning quick with problems of long-standing. To discover how fast it can work, let's try it out. Take several problems of long-standing and stop looking for the answers. Look to see what the underlying feeling is that produced the question in the first place. Once that feeling is let go, the answer will present itself automatically. Lifestyle. A lot of our activities and attachments are based on fear and anger, guilt, and pride. As these negative feelings are relinquished in any given area, we move up to courage. On that level, changes in life begin to occur. Or, if we choose to continue the same activity, the motivation is different, and consequently, we will experience different results than in the past. The emotional payoff will at least be different. Instead of grim satisfaction, we may experience joy. We may find ourselves doing the same activity as before, but now we do it out of enjoyment rather than obligation. We do it because we want to, not because we have to. The energy requirement will certainly be much less. One delightful discovery we will make is that our capacity for love is far beyond what we ever dreamed. The more we let go, the more loving we become. More and more of our life will be spent doing things that we love to do, with people for whom we feel increasing love. As this happens, our life becomes transformed. We look different. People respond differently to us. We are relaxed, happy, and easygoing. People are attracted to us because they feel comfortable and happy around us. Waitresses and cab drivers suddenly, mysteriously become attentive and courteous, and we will wonder, what has come over this world? The answer to that question is, you have. As we let go the negative, we come into our own power. It happens of its own. Happiness was in there all along, and now it shines forth after the blocks to it have been surrendered. We are now influencing everyone with whom we come into contact in a favorable way. Love is the most powerful of the emotional energy vibrations. For love, people will go to any lengths and do things that they would never do for any amount of money. When the negative blocks and I can'ts are removed, whole new areas of life open up to us. Success stems from doing what we like to do best, but most people are tied down to what they imagine they have to do. As limitations are relinquished, whole new avenues of creativity and expression become available. Let's take the example of a young woman with a lot of natural musical talent who was spending most of her time at a boring job, which she felt she had to stick to for financial reasons. What she really liked to do was play musical instruments when she was alone at home. It was something that she did strictly for personal enjoyment. Because of the lack of self-confidence, she seldom played for other people, even close friends. After she began to let go of her inner limitations, all of the low-energy feelings that were blocking her expression, her abilities and confidence grew so rapidly that she began to play in front of public gatherings. Her talent was well received, and a busy musical career ensued. She made a professional recording that was sufficiently successful that she could cut back to working part-time, and she began to pour more time and energy into what was now a blossoming career that brought her great joy and satisfaction. Although she had known nothing about business, she now started her own musical business, and within a year was distributing the recordings nationally, then in Europe. To her delight, she found that she was very successful by doing what she liked to do best. Her increasing vitality and happiness were apparent to everyone, and success spread to other areas of her life. Another example is that of a middle-aged engineer with no creative ability who had always hated poetry. After learning to let go of his negative feelings, suddenly he found himself writing haiku, a formal Japanese poetry style. He began writing reams of it effortlessly, and later developed the capacity for automatic writing. Still another example is that of a 60-year-old woman who decided to return to college part-time, even though she already had a full-time job. Eventually, she attained her bachelor's degree, then her master's degree, and finally a PhD, becoming an important executive with great responsibilities. There are literally thousands of examples that could be cited of the rapid expansions that take place in people's life when the I can'ts are surrendered. Life situations, often of long standing, may be suddenly resolved. Paradoxically, Such breakthroughs and expansions may be upsetting to friends and family members because of the shift of balance. Things that we had done out of constriction, fear, guilt, or a sense of duty may be suddenly thrown overboard. New levels of consciousness change perception, and new horizons open up. Many of the motives that drive people may suddenly become meaningless. Such things as money, fame, esteem, position, prestige, power, ambition, competitiveness, and the need for security diminish. They are replaced by the motivations of love, cooperation, fulfillment, freedom, creative expression, expansion of consciousness, understanding, and spiritual awareness. There tends to be more reliance on intuition and feelings than on thinking, reason, and logic. People who are very yang may discover their yin side, and vice versa. Rigid patterns give way to flexibility. Safety and security become less important than discovery and exploration. Personal lives pick up momentum, and movement replaces stuck-in-a-rut life patterns. One surprising observation about the mechanism of letting go is that major changes can take place very rapidly. Lifetime patterns can suddenly disappear, and long-standing inhibitions can be let go of in a matter of minutes, hours, or days. Rapid changes are accompanied by an increased aliveness. The life energy set free by the letting go of negativity now flows into positive attitudes, thoughts, and feelings, with a progressive increase of personal power. Thoughts are now more effective. More is accomplished with less effort. Intention is made powerful by the removal of doubts, fears, and inhibitions. With the removal of negativity, dynamic forces are unloosed, so that what were once impossible dreams now become actualized goals. Resolution of psychological problems. Comparison with psychotherapy. In general, letting go is often more rapid than psychotherapy. It is often more liberating and stimulating to the growth of consciousness and awareness. Psychotherapy, however, is better designed to elucidate underlying patterns. The two may work well together. The mechanism of letting go facilitates and speeds up psychotherapy, and it elevates its goals. Psychotherapy may be more gratifying intellectually because of its verbal nature and its focus on the whys behind behavior. However, that is also its limitation. Too often, intellectual insight is all that's really achieved, and the emotional working through is slow, often painful, and ultimately avoided. The mechanism of letting go, on the other hand, is concerned with the emotional what from moment to moment, without involving the intellect. The why becomes apparent of itself once the what has been relinquished. It's one thing to analyze the causal basis of depression, and quite another to enter fully into the depth of hopelessness by letting go of your resistance to the feeling. By allowing the full feeling of it, and by letting go of every sensation, every thought, and every little payoff you are getting from it, you are free. It's not necessary to probe the why of depression to become free from the what of it. The goals of letting go are far beyond those of psychotherapy. The ultimate aim of letting go and surrendering is total freedom. The goal of therapy is readjustment of the ego to a more healthy balance. The two systems are based on different paradigms of reality. The objective of psychotherapy is to replace unsatisfactory mental programs with more satisfactory ones. In contrast, the objective of letting go is the elimination of limiting mental and emotional programs. It is the attainment of an unconditioned mind, and ultimately, transcendence of the mind itself to higher states of consciousness, of love and peace. In therapy, there is dependence on therapists and their training and techniques, and there is also reliance on a psychological theory to which the therapist and the patient both subscribe. Scientific research reveals that the results of therapy are not related to the therapist's school of psychotherapy, training, or technique. Instead, the results are related to the interaction between them and the degree of the patient's desire to improve, as well as the patient's faith and confidence in the therapist. Therefore, psychic factors are operating of which psychotherapy is unaware. With the mechanism of letting go, there is no patient role and no dependency on another person or theory. The very wellsprings of neurotic patterns automatically unfold as they are acknowledged, relinquished, and disappear. Their basis is often at depths untouched by psychotherapy. Except for the few holistic frameworks, e.g. Jungian analysis, transpersonal psychology, therapy can be based on a limited understanding of the total mind. It commonly addresses itself only to a portion of the ego. It ignores and does not comprehend the great forces that determine, drive, and control the mind. Since the purpose of most psychotherapy is a well-adjusted ego, there is no conception of what is beyond the ego. The purpose of letting go, in contrast, is the elimination of the ego. The ego is fearful and limited, and when it is surrendered, the inner self stands forth, and what was always more powerful is revealed. Many psychotherapies have no real knowledge of the self and are, therefore, blind to reality itself. As for efficacy, psychotherapy is like a horse and buggy, while the mechanism of surrender and letting go is like a spaceship. In the time it takes for therapy to slowly poke about a limited area, letting go has already moved far beyond it into a whole new dimension. Letting go has a peculiar advantage in that the surrendering of one